Well, hi, everyone. Elevators are unusual places, aren't they? Especially crowded elevators. Have you ever been on one of these? We were at the Eiffel Tower recently, and we were in an elevator packed like sardines, intimately close to people that you've never met before, and you really try not to touch them. In fact, I tried to freak out my teenage son by reaching down and pinching his butt while looking and pointing out the window and distracting him, making him think that the 90-year-old woman behind him was getting frisky, you know? So you're crammed all together and nobody talks. You know, it's like elevator etiquette. You don't talk. You don't look at anyone. In fact, you know, where's the only place that you can look? That's right, up at the numbers. See, you know your etiquette. And in many respects, that elevator is like a little microcosm of our world today. An impersonal place where even though we're close in proximity, we couldn't be further relationally. A place of anonymity and isolation and independence. And you could be surrounded by lots of other people in a crowded setting and not experience any meaningful interaction. You can be part of a company or a school or a team or a club or even a church and not feel like you belong or are accepted. You can share a street address, an office, or listen, you can even share a bedroom and not feel like you're having meaningful relational connections. And so we're in week 5 of our series called Reset, and today we'll be looking at our core value that we say we want to be a church of authentic relationships. And here's how it reads. We won't just put on our Sunday best and pretend that everything is okay. We create environments where it's safe to share stories of struggle and triumph and sadness, doubt, and hope. You can go to our website at Who Is Grace to get caught up with the other 4 values that we've explored in our sermons this month. But today, we're looking at this value, authentic relationships. Now, we try to model this all the way through our organization. Here in the preaching ministry, what we try to be real and just, you know, normal. And if you were to be a fly on the wall in some of our highest level leadership meetings here at Grace, our lead team meetings or our central team or our elders, you would see us spending the first 15 minutes or so catching up with each other in life. How are you really? How's your marriage? How's your relationship with God? What are some prayer needs that you have? I mean, we want authentic relationships to permeate through everything that we do. Now, why? Why? It's because at its core, Christianity is about authentic relationships. Christianity has its creeds, yes, and they're important. And we have our sacraments or ordinances, communion and baptism, and they're beautiful. We have our sacred text, the Bible, and it's central. But every other religion in the world also has creeds and traditions and sacred texts. But one of the things that differentiates Christianity from every other religion in the world is that at its core, it's all about a God who says, let's walk in relationship together. Not if you work your way up the ladder, maybe you'll get to me, or if you pray this prayer this many times a day, or if you go on this many pilgrimages, if you perform this many good deeds, then we'll talk. No, God doesn't say that. He says, because of my grace and mercy, I have come to you to be in relationship with me. You have access to me. But not only that, then God tells us that the only way that we can be complete in him is to also walk in relationship with other people, other Christians. At its core, Christianity is about relationships. You know, a few weeks ago, we talked about a famous passage called the Great Commission. And there's another foundational passage from the mouth of Jesus called the Great Commandment. Jesus was asked by someone, what's the greatest commandment in the law? And so he was asked to boil the whole Old Testament down into a Reader's Digest version. Does that even exist anymore? Or the Old Testament for dummies. How about that? And I like questions like this because someone asked him to cut through everything, get right to the heart of the matter. What's the most important thing for us to get, Jesus? And he says, okay, I'll give you 2. The most important thing is to love God with everything that you've got, heart, soul, mind, and strength. But the second, he says, is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love God and love people. Do you hear how relational that summary is? He doesn't say obey this list or perform these practices or believe these doctrines. He says be in a love relationship with God and with the people around you. And then you've gotten to the core of the Christian faith. It only makes sense that relationships are so close to the heart of God. mean, when you think about the Trinity, the Godhead, Father, Son, and Spirit, God exists in an eternal relationship. And then when Jesus came to the earth, he poured his life into three people, and then 12, and then 120, and then the rest of the crowds. He lived his life on this earth in deep, life-giving, authentic relationships. He could have been a recluse, but he was relationally engaged. And so we were made for authentic relationships. The truth is that we crave them. We long for them. We were created with a need for them. And when we don't have them, it's obvious that something's missing in our life. You know, we live in a pretty interesting time when it comes to human relationships. Connectivity is easier now than it's ever been. You can make connections to people more quickly than you've ever been able to do in the history of the world. You can let people know the most useless, worthless bits of information about your life. All over the globe, they can know. You can take a picture of the Mexican sampler platter that you ordered at El Canelo's and tweet it and Facebook it and Snapchat it and Periscope it to all your friends all over the world so they can just sit there and be jealous of your tamales and frijoles, right? But here's the thing. Although we're more connected than we've ever been with more people than we've ever been, despite the fact that it's easier to find people with shared common interests than it's ever been, we feel more alone and more unknown than at any time that's been measured in human history. Recent studies from Duke University and the U.S. Census have come up with these statistics. 25% of Americans say that they don't have one other person that they can turn to as a confidant. Not one person. More people than ever are depressed and are linking their depression to loneliness. The number of people classified as socially isolated, the Americans, has doubled since 1985. In 30 years, it's doubled. In his great new book called Life in Community, Dustin Willis compared what's happening to a weight loss idea that someone suggested to him. They said, you know, every time you feel the urge to eat, just chew on ice instead, because the sensation of chewing and consuming the ice will help to soothe the urge to want to eat. It's a way to trick your body, they said. But when he tried this method, he discovered that while ice is good for cooling drinks, in the end, it doesn't supply the sustainable nourishment that your body needs. It works only for a very brief moment, and then you're hungry again. And in the same way, social media relationships and shallow relationships, they're like chewing ice. They trick us into believing that they can give us what we need, but really, they fail to be a sustainable means of community. We think we're growing strong bonds of friendship while we spend time looking in on other people who seem to have cooler lives than we do. We think that these little screens are going to satisfy our loneliness, and in reality, they only deepen it. It's like chewing ice. We were at Disney a few years ago, and I snapped this picture in the play area where parents and kids were supposed to be playing together and spending time together and enjoying their relationships with one another. I mean, this was Disney after all, the place where dreams are made, relationships are deepened, and families are brought together. Look at what happened. You know, so what happens, it seems, is that before long, our lives resemble that awkward elevator, surrounded by lots of people, without a single meaningful interaction to speak of. And so I ask, do you have some authentic relationships with other Christians? Do you have a group of people where it's okay to share struggle and triumph and joy and sadness? I mean, when was the last time that you had a conversation with someone that was real and you walked away feeling like, you know what, that was a safe place to really be me? Or someone who genuinely cared for you and meaningfully spoke into your life. Do you have authentic relationships? Are you experiencing this value in your own life? Well, not only did God create us for meaningful relationships, and not only has he modeled relationships through the Trinity and through the disciples, but he also built the church to function in authentic relationships. And so our text today is in 1 Thessalonians 2. And as you turn there in your Bible or device, let me give you a little background. This text was written by Paul. He gives us a picture of this community. Now remember Paul's background. He was a killer of Christians, and then he was converted to Christianity through this dramatic encounter with Christ on the road to Damascus. And it changed the whole path of his life. But maybe even more amazing than this dramatic conversion is to see what happened immediately afterwards. He didn't start taking classes. He didn't go off to seminary. Instead, God immediately begins to bring key people into Paul's life. He does it very intentionally and even supernaturally. And so God speaks in a vision to Ananias, and he tells him the street name of where to go and find Paul. I mean, you think God isn't concerned about the details of your life? He's got it all the way down to the street name. And then Paul was baptized, and he spent this meaningful time in relationship with the believers in Damascus. Well, then he went down to Jerusalem to join the community of the main band of disciples, the big boys, right? Peter and James. But they were afraid. They didn't trust his conversion. He was killing Christians, remember? They were ready to cast him out. And imagine what had happened if Paul had given up then and just went off by himself. But in Acts 9:27, the Bible says two key words that changed everything. It says, "But Barnabas." But Barnabas brought him to the apostles. You see, God brought alongside an advocate into Paul's life, and he said, no, Paul, you can't go off on your own. You'll never make it in the Christian life on your own. There's way too much value in community. Authentic relationships are too central to the Christian life for you to just walk out of here and give up on it. And guys, who knows what would happen to Paul's fledgling faith if he didn't find that community. And so God says, I'll send Barnabas to pave the way for you. You see how important these relationships are to God. And can I just play the role of Barnabas today with you and through this sermon take you by the shoulders and say, guys, authentic relationships are too important for you to ignore. And maybe you feel like you've tried before and you weren't able to break in, weren't able to connect. But listen, you need to be in community. It's how God designed us to operate. And so Paul goes on to be the greatest missionary that Christianity has ever known. And not surprisingly, central to his own strategy in planting churches was the idea of authentic relationships. Every church Paul planted was started with a core of people whom he continually pleaded with to love each other, care for each other, honor one another, encourage one another, be at peace with one another, invest in one another. And so we come to 1 Thessalonians 2:7 and we get a glimpse behind the scenes at one of these little churches of how this all worked as Paul remembered a time that he had spent in community with this church in Thessalonica. Look what he says, starting in verse 7. But we proved to be gentle among you as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her children. Having so fond an affection for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives, because you'd become very dear to us. For you recall, brethren, our labor and hardship, how working night and day as to not be a burden to any of you, we proclaimed to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and so is God, how devoutly and uprightly and blamelessly we behaved toward you believers. And just as you know how we were exhorting and encouraging and imploring each one of you as a father would his own children, so that you would walk in a manner worthy of the God who calls you into his own kingdom and his own glory. That was a powerful description of community. Paul's describing here this environment that was created so that people could grow to be more like Jesus. It was like an incubator or a greenhouse. If the goal of our lives is to become more and more like Jesus, which it is, we all need an incubator like this, where authentic relationships can grow and thrive and play out so that spiritual growth is possible for the likes of you and me. Here at Grace, we're committed more than ever to making these relational connections in the form of life groups. I want us to learn from this text these three building blocks of authentic relationships. And so the first building block is this. It's care. It's care. It's caring for the needs of others. Listen to what Paul says. He describes this environment that they were in. He says, we were gentle. We were filled with affection. We shared our lives. We cared like a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children. You see, in authentic relationships, there's always this rotation between having needs and meeting needs. How many of you know we all have needs? Now think about Paul's metaphor. A nursing baby is nothing but needs. They don't pay rent. They don't leave tips. Nobody's getting paid for taking care of these little creatures. And yet there is total and unadulterated acceptance and care by the mother. The baby has nothing to offer except their needs. The mom is just giving and giving and giving. I mean, there are sleepless nights, juggling schedules, really ugly diapers, stuff coming out of orifices, ear infections. I mean, the only means of communication for a while is screaming and crying, and that's just the parents. But here's the thing. This is the image that Paul's painting, not for children, but for adults, about what authentic relationships require. He says it involves having needs and caring for needs. And so when you're in a real grown-up relationship, there are needs. And sometimes it feels like you're the only one giving. But do you know what? There will come a time when you'll be the one in need too. And one of the beautiful things about being in a Christian community is that there will be times when you care and times when you'll be cared for. You may ask, well, doesn't God promise to just care for my needs himself? The answer is yes, but he usually extends his care to us through other people. And there are times when things will hit you in life. You're not going to get the care that you need from Facebook or your bridge club or your lifting partner or even me or another pastor, but through the compassionate and caring believers who are in your life, and they are conduits then of God's love and grace to you. I'm so fortunate to have some long-time authentic relationship with some friends who I happen to work with, people like Aaron and Danielle and Kathy and Mike and some others. We've been serving together in community for over 15 years. And there have been times I've cared for them and times they've cared for me. I was remembering this week back to a couple years ago when Kim and I had received some scary health diagnosis about one of our kids. And everything worked out fine in the end, but there were some very scary days as we walked through it. And I was trying to be strong for Kim, and we had many talks and talked it through, and we each had our breakdown moments at home. But I remember a day that it was really weighing heavily on me while I was studying at Wegmans for a sermon. And Danielle came up to chat about a quick ministry decision that we needed to make. And as we're talking, I just broke. I just lost it. I was blubbering like a fool in the middle of Wegmans, saying all the stuff that I'd been thinking but hadn't actually spoken out loud. And she was like, hey, buddy, I just needed a quick budget decision, okay? No, she didn't. She cried with me. She prayed for me. She listened to me. She cared, because caring happens when you're in authentic relationships with people. Do you have people in your life who care for you when you need them? Who you can care for when they need you? And further, do you know where care happens best in a church like ours? In a life group. Do you know that multiple times I've gone to visit someone in the hospital who got rushed in there unexpectedly, and when I showed up, I've been told that I can't go in to see them because there are already five or six other pastors from the church who have gone in, and I tried to explain, yeah, but I'm the, you know, you don't understand. I mean, I'm, never mind. This is so cool, right? Because their group was already on the scene providing care, and I thought, man, the church is working right. And so the first building block for authentic relationships is care, and care happens best in groups. The second building block is this: honesty. In our text, Paul shifts his metaphor from the care of a nursing mother to the accountability and motivation and honesty of a father. Look at some of the phrasing that he uses in verses 9 through 11. He said, we proclaim to you the gospel of God. In other words, we told you the truth of the gospel. And then he says, exhorting and encouraging and imploring each other as a father would his own children. He's saying we moved beyond that place of just sharing and meeting needs with each other, and we entered that deeper place of honesty. Paul says, I told you the truth about the gospel, but I also told you the truth about yourselves, like a father does to his children. You know, one of the things that makes authentic relationships authentic is that we tell each other the truth. Because in authenticity, it's not enough just to have a few friends with some common interests. We must commit ourselves to getting beneath the surface and becoming honest and accountable to each other. Authenticity occurs when the masks come off, when conversations get deep and hearts get vulnerable and lives are shared and feedback is invited and tenderness flows. Now we're cooking when that happens, right? We desperately need the truth in our lives. Do you know why? Because it helps us to avoid hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is the number one thing that keeps people who are far from God from coming to church. Hypocrisy is just when instead of telling the truth to each other, Christians resort to pretending. There's so many people pretending. I read this story in Willis's book this week of a young lawyer who had just started his own law firm. He leased a small storefront and he took out a loan for some expensive office furniture. He wanted to look good. He hadn't even landed his first client yet, but he sat faithfully in his office waiting. And finally, he heard somebody walking through the front door and he wanted to look impressive. And so the lawyer immediately began a frantic rush to appear busy and important. And so he picked up his phone and he started rattling off a bunch of big legal words to this make-believe person on the other end of the line. The man who walked in waited for a few moments, and then the lawyer hung up the phone and he said to him, "Hey, what can I do for you?" And the guy looked at him and said, "Hey, I'm just here to set up the phone line." There's a lot of pretending going on. And we need each other to tell the truth if we're going to break free from our pretend, phony, pseudo-spiritual lives. We don't want it, but we desperately need honesty in our relationships. And do you know where honesty happens best in a church like ours? In a life group. It's not going to happen in a big room like this full of people, but it will happen in a living room. It won't happen in a bunch of rows, but it can happen in small circles of loving and caring Christians. I meet together with a small group of guys, and it's one of the most refreshing hours of my week. Do you know why? Because we tell each other the truth. There are no pulled punches, ever. There's permission given for complete honesty. There are no flowery words, no political correctness. If someone did something dumb, someone else will say, "Well, that was dumb." I mean, it's the raw truth. We desperately need the truth. We need people to tell us. Paul said we need people who will exhort and encourage and implore us because we won't follow Christ well any other way. And so authentic relationships involve caring, they involve honesty, and the third building block is they involve spiritual growth. Paul says that the result of these caring and truth-filled environments is people who will walk in a manner worthy of the God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. I love that. True community motivates us to walk in a way that's worthy of the God we serve. Isn't that what we're all longing for? To walk worthy of our Creator. And Paul maintains this family metaphor, or framly, if you will. He went from the care of a nursing mother to the honest evaluation of a motivating father. And now he says that that environment causes us to walk. And so picture a little kid that's just learning to walk. Mom and dad are saying, "Hey, little guy, we love you, but we want to teach you the joy of forward motion." So you prop the kid up on a table and you back up and you hold out your arms and you say, "Get over here," right? It's an environment that says, we will love you where you are, but we're not content with where you are. It's time to walk. We'll show you grace, and we'll show you truth. We'll offer care, and we'll offer honesty. We'll accept you completely as you are, and we'll call you forward to develop you into what you aren't yet. So Paul's describing an environment that leads to forward spiritual motion, spiritual growth. And the truth is, spiritual growth happens best in the context of authentic relationships. In fact, I would argue that it only happens in the context of authentic relationships. There are no Lone Ranger Christians, and spiritual growth never happens in a vacuum. We need each other. You know why? Because when it comes to spiritual growth, we have an extraordinary capacity for self-deception. We think we're better than we are. Here's why. We judge ourselves by our intentions rather than by our actions. For example, we can read a verse in the Bible like Colossians 3 that rattles a list off like this. It says, clothe yourself with compassion and kindness and humility and gentleness and patience. Now, we obviously know that we're not perfect at this, but we can give ourselves a lot of credit for doing very little. For example, it's easy for me to think that I'm doing pretty good on the whole compassion thing. When I'm all by myself, I can watch a heart warming video on YouTube and weep and think, you know what? I'm a compassionate person. I have a tender, compassionate heart. Or you can look in on your kids at night while they're asleep and you're just filled with kindness and patience and gentleness toward those little guys. Just like the verse talks about, right? And you think, I can't imagine that that would ever be in me to get angry at these little angels. But when they're awake, you know, suddenly you can imagine it. John Ortberg said it this way, and I've learned it too. He said, I can get along with anyone as long as one of us is asleep. It's when we're both awake that problems seem to creep in. You see, this is really important, this important truth about spiritual growth. All day long, I can imagine myself doing generous things while at the same time never doing anything generous. Those kinds of daydreams, they can be good. They can lead to action, but often they just stay daydreams. They never get translated into reality. But I imagine myself doing something generous, or I see myself wanting to do something generous, and I think, well, there you go. I must be a generous person. Or I daydream about somebody passing me, or praising me, I'm sorry, and me being humble in my response. And I think, wow, I'm pretty humble. You see, we can deceive ourselves. We need to push past all of that and actually grow spiritually. And do you know where spiritual growth happens best in a church like ours? In a life group. This is why authentic relationships within a group are so important, because the test of my spiritual growth happens in community. What do I actually do with real people? I get to test out if I really am patient, if I really am gentle or compassionate or generous. I can take those daydreams and bounce them off of real people, and they can hold me accountable to do some of the stuff that I'm daydreaming about. But without authentic relationships, I can live my whole life thinking that I'm someone or something that I'm not. And so it's within authentic relationships that caring can happen, that honesty can happen, and that true spiritual growth can happen. This is what it means to follow Jesus, to be his disciple. And here's the deal, guys. Christianity is a discipleship enterprise. And because of that, our church is a discipleship enterprise. Do you know what the word Christian means? It means little Christ. Christianity is not a religion, a creed, or a Sunday morning tradition. It's a lifelong relational process of becoming more and more like Jesus. And so, Grace Church, I ask, are we becoming more and more like Jesus? Are you? And occasionally, it's important to step back and look at the reason that we exist and then to ask, how are we doing with that? And so as I've been pondering this during the past 6 months or so, I haven't been real happy, honestly, with my conclusions. You know, as a church, we're in the disciple-making business. But our disciple-making is not as strong as it needs to be. We have a long way to go. We cast a vision a while ago. We said that we want the temperature of life-on-life discipleship at Grace to reach the boiling point. 212, we call it. But we're not there yet. You know what, though? The best chance we have to get there is through life groups. The only shot that we have at true spiritual growth is authentic relationships. And as I look across our church and see where true spiritual growth is happening, where lives are truly being changed, it's in groups. And so I want to admit to you that we haven't put the priority on groups that we should have up to this point. It's a combination of things that we've recently adjusted that's going to turn this around. And I'm here today to declare to you that we will be a church more committed to walking out our faith in authentic relationships than we've ever been before. First off, if you haven't picked up on it by now, we will be renaming this ministry Life Groups. We'll be rolling out a new look in the coming weeks, but more than just cosmetic changes, we've made some substantive changes as well to this ministry. We've designated a leader, Erin Masenko, who will be using all of her time on staff to lead this ministry. She's a fantastic first-rate leader. We've added a coaching structure to keep our group leaders properly resourced and fired up to do their job well. And speaking of leaders, we're in the process of inviting our very best leaders around Grace to lead a life group so that there are plenty of fantastic groups to choose from. In fact, if you're interested in leading, you can pick up a brochure at the Next Step Center. We'd love to talk to you about that. We have also clarified our ministry pathway to make sure that there's a clear priority on getting into a group. You can see in our pathway that we want people to come and experience a worship service or event. We want them to get connected, to attend a core class. That's very critical. But then the major next step for everyone is to join a life group. All of our discipleship ministries are now going to happen under the umbrella of life groups. You've seen our acronym, L-I-V-E, that represents the components of a growing disciple. All of those ministry components and elements, living in community, investing in others, volunteering, and equipping yourself, they are all going to happen in the context of groups. And so if you want to grow in your faith at Grace, the step that you need to take, it's very clear, is to get into a life group. Right now, we have about 30% of our weekend attendance in a group. And by the end of this ministry year, our goal is for that number to be 75%. So we have some work to do. And starting in a couple weeks, through the month of September, in our series called Framily, we're going to be exploring what biblical community in the context of a group looks like and just what we're challenging you to. And this year, we're challenging you. In the past, we've talked about finding your chair, but September, we're going to be talking about finding your couch. And I can't wait to see what God has in store for us as we put this laser-like focus on this value of authentic relationships in the coming year. God bless you guys.